Good morning. The Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Will Kiva please call the roll?
Chair Andrade.
Here.
Vice Chair Cheney.
Here.
Ranking Member Silvers.
Here.
Representatives Antone, Burfield.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Esposito. G. Lombardo.
Here.
Harris.
Here.
Lamarca. Lopez.
Here.
Placencia.
Here.
Robinson is excused. Yeager.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Before we begin, please make sure all electronic devices are turned off or placed on vibrate. Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. As promised, today we'll conclude our presentations on the legislative budget requests from our three remaining agencies. We'll begin with the Department of State, followed by Department of Transportation and the Division of Emergency Management. I promised Secretary Byrd that he could go first so he can catch a flight out of town. So, Secretary Byrd.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, Ranking Member Silvers, and members of the committee. It is a pleasure to be with you this morning. Today, I will share with the committee the governor's major budget recommendations for the Florida Department of State in fiscal year 2024-2025. Before I present some of the department's budgetary considerations, I want to give a brief overview of the Florida Department of State's organization and my statutory duties as Secretary of State. The Florida Department of State is organized into five divisions, which you see on the slide here. In addition to my duties as head of the Florida Department of State, my duties also include State Protocol Officer, Chief Election Officer, and Chief Cultural Officer. All right. The Florida Department of State's budgetary considerations include 462 FTE, a total operating budget of $120,032,286, and a fixed capital outlay of $134 million. The following budget items are not an exhaustive list, but only a dozen or so of the department's funding priorities. They fall into four general categories of information technology, staffing historical resources, and the State Record Center. Here you'll see the first of the governor's major budget recommendations for the Florida Department of State for information technology projects. First, modernization of legacy systems, funding for the modernization of the following legacy systems to include SunBiz, the state's online business filing system, the Florida voter registration system, the campaign finance reporting system, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, and FloridaRules.org platform. During fiscal year 22-23, the Department of State was appropriated funding for feasibility on modernizing these systems. FVRS is the Florida voter registration system. The Department of State Division of Elections requests funding to competitively procure a solution for the modernization of the FVRS. A modernized system will increase efficiency within the division and bring all processes into an electronic automated system with a corresponding database. The modernization project will include a new application and database for voter registration and voter eligibility activities, including processes and systems supporting or interfacing with those activities conducted solely by the division or in coordination with county supervisors of elections. Additionally, the new system will increase data security and integrity and have more agility to react to required legislative changes. Florida rule system modernization. Next, the Department and Division of Library and Information Services requests funding for the modernization of the Florida Rules, which is FLRules.org platform. FloridaRules.org is the state's primary tool for facilitating the rulemaking process for state agencies, for notifying the public of state agencies' activities related to rulemaking and status of rules currently in development, and publishing new and amended rules. It also includes the laws of Florida, where laws are published for public consumption. The system has remained largely unchanged since its initial implementation 16 years ago. This modernization will support functionality with current-day sophistication, such as automated workflows and notices, self-service portals, dashboards, optimized user interface, and improved data integrity and security. Our next item is a request from the Department of State Division of Elections for a request for to competitively procure a cloud-based solution for campaign finance modernization. Funds in this request will be used to create a best-in-class system that will modernize the processes and information used for qualifying candidates, registering political entities, submitting online campaign finance reports, and maintaining modern, searchable public interfacing databases. The new system solution must include functionality required for the efficient and effective management for the commissioning of elected and appointed officials. Modernization would include replacing the legacy statewide electronic campaign finance reporting system, or EFS, and creating a new new cloud-based, flexible, configurable, and more secure statewide electric filing platform. The EFS is the portal and system utilized by candidates and committees to satisfy compliance with Florida statutes related to campaign finances. Modernization of the current system would offer mobile-optimized web applications and improved browser compatibility. Next, the Department of State Division of Corporations requests funding to competitively procure a solution that will modernize the processes and workflow of the Florida Corporate Registry, known as SunBiz. Thanks to the economic policies of the governor, Florida leads a nation in new business creation. Every day, approximately 3,000 new business entities use SunBiz to electronically file their paperwork. Therefore, investment in a modernized system will enhance efficiency to handle the increased volume the division is experiencing. The scope of the project is to deliver streamlined processes that citizens and business entities can use for corporate filings and other Division of Corporation services. The department hopes to deliver a re-engineered disaster recovery component, provide new security measures to protect businesses from unauthorized changes to their records, improve overall performance and reliability, and reduce operating costs. This will replace the current legacy system, which is operating on code built in 1993 and hardware refreshed 20 years ago in 2003. In FY21-22, this system was bolstered using funding received for that purpose and is expected to remain viable for the duration of the modernization project. SunBiz produces $500 million in revenue per year. This non-recurring funding request for this project is only 4% of that annual revenue. The Division of Elections requests contracted service dollars to hire a vendor to revamp the current workflow for several forward-facing standalone websites. Sites that would be prioritized for an update would be initiative petitions, third-party voter registration organizations, voter information lookup, and election results archives. Updates to these sites would range from full modernizations to feature enhancements, including ADA requirements and Spanish language options. Modernizing these sites is anticipated to have a substantial impact on voter confidence concerning election integrity. Our next item is a request from the Division of Administrative Services to increase storage and the associated costs of transitioning on-premises workflows to cloud-based hosting. The increase of funds will provide for the rise in cloud-based storage costs and allow for growth. In FY21-22, the department received initial funding in the amount of $641,000 based on costs provided by the data center. Next, the Department of State Division of Elections is requesting funding for an annual subscription for the Albert Network Monitoring Solution for the Division of Elections and all 67 Supervisors of Elections offices. And I just want to pause there. The state, you know, we're recommending that the state provide that funding to all 67 Supervisors of Elections. Albert Network Monitoring and Management is an industry-leading intrusion detection system designed specifically for U.S. state, local, and tribal and territorial government organizations. It is enhanced with support from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Center for Internet Security, 24/7, 365 Security Operations Center. To maximize threat detection, the state and all 67 county supervisors of elections office must be using the service. Previously, the division administered a grant program for the supervisors to apply for this service. The division requests to move to a statewide contract to ensure the continuity and continuation of these critical services that will support the overarching security posture of the FVRS at the level at the local level by providing funding. Next, moving on to staffing. The Division of Historical Resources requests funding in one FTE position to fulfill new federal requirements related to consultation and repatriation of Native American human remains and associated funerary collections. These funds will be used to hire critical staff for the division to comply with the new reporting requirements under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, known as NAGPRA, requiring that the division maintain and report on all Native American human remains and associated cultural belongings housed in state archaeological collections. And I will say as a side note that as our state continues to grow, we continue to find more and more remains, and we have a great working relationship with the Native American tribes in Florida. The division is responsible for investigating instances of unmarked human burials on public and private land in Florida and are determined to be 75 years or more deceased and of non-medico-legal significance per Section 872.05. When it is necessary to safeguard these remains, such as those removed from looted archaeological sites or identified during law enforcement investigations, they are curated at the State Archaeological Collections Facility, where they are inventoried pending consultation with descendant communities. Per NAGPRA, once remains have been accessioned, The division is required to determine any possible Native American tribal affiliation and to consult with federally recognized tribal nations to determine final disposition, alongside reporting new acquisitions of human remains and associated cultural belongings accepted under 872.05. The division must also reassess existing holdings that were previously considered culturally unidentifiable following changes to the federal legislation that are scheduled to be implemented in January of 2024. With an additional position, it would allow the division to meet these requirements by providing specialist osteological support for the agency. The position would be responsible for tribal consultation, as stipulated by NAGPRA, working with partner agencies to identify split funerary collections associated with the human remains, documenting new acquisitions, and assisting the division with responding to new cases of unmarked human burials and disturbed historic cemeteries more than 75 years old, as statutorily required of the state archaeologist. The Office of the Secretary of the and the Division of Arts and Culture requests funding and two FTE positions to staff the Office of International Affairs. As laid out in statute, my role as Secretary of State includes that of the Florida State's Protocol Officer, where I serve as the global ambassador for the state of Florida in diplomatic, economic, and cultural exchanges with the international community. These positions requested will assist me and coordinate with my office to provide critical communication with our international partners. This office will provide country-specific briefings, protocol assistance, and will serve as the point of contact for foreign government officials wishing to meet with Florida officials and vice versa. And I can tell you that in my meetings with various governments and their representatives through their consul general's office, I mean, there is tremendous interest in the state of Florida, both in cultural exchanges and in international business exchanges, as Florida is the gateway to Latin America and with all of the other economic business that's going on. All right. The Florida Department of State Division of Historical Resources requests non-recurring funds for preserving and protecting Florida's historical resources. The division requests non-recurring general revenue in the facilities construction and major renovation special category to construct a new conservation laboratory. The department is currently in the early design phase for the new artifact facility located at Mission San Luis and is working with the Department of Management Services and the architect and engineer team to design and construct this facility in a way that allows for the future addition of a new conservation laboratory in the new building if funding is appropriated. The department previously received an appropriation of $13.8 million to design and construct the new artifact facility. The existing facility, currently in the basement of the R.A. Gray Building, built in 1977, is inadequate to meet the needs of the agency. A new laboratory would include enhanced safety features, more appropriate equipment and workspaces, and provide for better public engagement with the process for caring for the state's irreplaceable archaeological collections. And just as we've been meeting with the architects, it's really exciting because there will be the ability for the public to actually view the archaeologists as they are working and going through the collection. So we're really excited about the educational opportunities with this project. The relocation also prevents staff from having to transport easily damaged artifacts between locations. This funding is to construct a new facility that provides adequate space for both the long-term curation and storage of the state's archaeological collections and a conservation lab that meets the needs of the agency. Currently, the department loans more than 80,000 archaeological objects to qualified institutions throughout Florida and in other states and is free of charge. The division requests money to procure a new suite of marine survey equipment for the Bureau of Archaeological Research. The Bureau is responsible for managing cultural resources throughout Florida and is tasked with the inventory and promotion of underwater archaeological resources across the state, including inland, offshore, and nearshore underwater environments. The Bureau also assists law enforcement in archaeological damage assessments. The existing acoustic equipment is no longer functional, having served the state since the late 1990s. A modern high-resolution side-scan sonar and bathymetry survey system would collect data that can be used to identify, record, and monitor submerged landforms. To complete these mission-critical objectives, the Bureau must use remote sensing equipment to map Florida's sovereignty submerged lands. Bureau archaeologists are responsible for exploring and mapping the land under our rivers and lakes and the ocean floor. Survey mapping and inventory of Florida's submerged environments is the primary method by which the state manages known sites and identifies new submerged sites. As part of the survey system, a high accuracy positioning device and sound velocity profiler is required to collect high resolution location information and water conditions. The division requests non-recurring dollars in the Land Acquisition Trust Fund for security improvement and improvements at the Miami Circle at Brickell Point, a state-owned and division-managed National Historic Landmark archaeological site in Miami, Florida. The goals of providing full-time security services include making visitors feel safer to increase public use of the site and discouraging unauthorized use and disturbance of this ancient ceremonial site. The Miami Circle is in downtown Miami at the mouth of the Miami River at Brickell Point. It is surrounded by water and high-rise condos. Currently, the site has limited lighting. To maximize site use in the evenings and to increase site safety after dark, we are requesting money for security lighting installation and upgrades, including a security alarm station. There are currently four freestanding interpretive signs at the Miami Circle that were installed approximately 15 years ago. These signs have become badly deteriorated and illegible over time due to exposure to the elements and need replacement. I was there over the summer, and I can confirm that it's nearly impossible to read them. And since they are a state property, it's important that we have the public's ability to understand and learn what we're protecting. The Division of Historical Resources continually receives complaints that the actual circle excavated at the center of the site is not visible to visitors. The fully excavated archaeological site is currently covered by approximately 3 feet of fill dirt to protect it from the elements. Today, the circle is cordoned off by railings and a barrier of vegetation. Visitors are not able to stand in the circle to experience and visualize what it looked like after it was excavated. The division would like to create an interpretive exhibit that would allow visitors to better understand the size, scale, and construction methods of the circle while also having the experience of standing amongst history. This request includes money for construction of this outdoor exhibit, procurement of security services, installation of appropriate lighting and security station, as well as the creation and replacement of signage. The Department of State requests funding to offset revenue losses to the Records Management Trust Fund. The revenues generated by the services at the Florida State Records Center have diminished over the past several years, primarily due to frequent use of electronic records rather than paper records. Currently, the cost of operating the Records Center is roughly twice the amount of revenue coming in. Since FY22-23, the division has kept four positions vacant due to the loss of revenue. In addition, in the past year, even holding positions vacant, the revenue was $75,000 less than operating costs. There are three main types of records stored at the center: paper records in boxes, electronic media, and security microfilm. To hold fees at the current rate and to fill the four vacant positions along with the operating expenses needed to manage the center and to continue operating the Record Center, general revenue dollars are requested. The center operation would operate by charging the same fees that are currently charged to agencies. Records Management Trust Fund will be used to fund the centers, supplemented by general revenue. There are currently 275,000 rolls of microfilm and over 140,000 boxes stored at the Record Center. And before I conclude, I do want to recognize Ms. Althamese Barnes, who's here. I hope we'll make some public comment. We work closely with Ms. Barnes and FAPN to tell the story of Black Americans in Florida, and so just appreciate the partnership that we have with her and FAPN. And finally, this concludes the Florida Department of State's presentation of our budget request priorities. I appreciate your time, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. I know that was a lot of information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary Byrd. I know that we have one question from Vice Chair Cheney.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. Thank you for the presentation. Very comprehensive. Are you able to address how voter log hygiene is going? I know it increased requirements for that, and that's top of mind for a lot of our constituents. So if you could just address that a little.
Sure. So you're referring to the statutory changes made in Senate Bill 7050, and I know that the supervisors are diligently implementing those new requirements. Voter roll maintenance is critical to ensuring integrity of the elections, and it must be done on the front end. You can't wait till it's on the back end. So I know we are all, when I say we, I'm talking about the Department of State, Division of Elections, and the 67 supervisors of elections are diligently preparing for 2024. It is our Super Bowl, and so all of those requirements that the legislature passed and the governor signed into law are moving ahead as you have intended.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Are they providing you with reports, or how do you know who is meeting this statute and who maybe is falling short?
So, right, they are required, that was one of the changes, or some of the changes in 7050 was to require more timely reporting and to put all supervisors on a schedule. They are meeting those requirements, and I do have the statutory authority, in cases where necessary, to send monitors into supervisors of elections offices. We recently had elections in Osceola, Seminole, and Orange counties, and we sent observers there just to make sure, not because anything was wrong, but just to make sure that that the elections are running smoothly, everybody's prepared. So it is a team effort, and I can report that things are moving ahead, but we're on this 24/7, 365.
Representative Brackett, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Secretary, can you please give me an updated time frame on the completion of your legacy systems?
Well, that will
modernizing of them.
Sure. I mean, that would depend on the whether or not the legislature appropriates the funds, then we have to procure them. So we're probably talking, I don't know, let me turn to my staff, a couple years. Yes, okay, so 4 to 6 years. If the money's appropriated next year, it would take 4 to 6 years for all of the modernizations to be completed.
Okay. Other question?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Also, can you give us an update on the money that was appropriated last year, I think about $3.5 million for the lead base paint abatement?
Sure. So we have several historic properties around the city of Tallahassee, and last year we discovered that several of them had an issue with lead-based paint, and some of our employees were working in those facilities. I can tell the legislature that we had everyone tested medically. No one was levels that were too high, but then we requested money to strip all the paint out, revitalize those properties, so that is taking place.
Representative Lamarca, do you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. Secretary, thanks for your presentation. Can you just share a quick overview of 67 elections offices, how they provide and maintain and fund monitor drop boxes? It seems to be an issue in some of the larger counties, specifically mine, that they seem to have the idea that they're limited by anything other than funding.
Sure. So your question is, so state law covers where and in the time frames in which supervisors can place drop boxes. So that's defined in statute. We've continually had to work on it and improve that. But as far as I know, they're all in compliance currently with state law. I mean, we haven't received any reports. And I can tell you in the last election cycle, so in November of 22, I mean, we were watching, and that's the reason, citizens need to be engaged, because they could report things if they thought anything was untoward. And I can tell you that all of the reports that we received of problems with drop boxes, when we investigated it, that the supervisors were in compliance with the law.
It sounds like we might have an idea for a separate meeting. Representative Lamarca, if you had a follow-up question.
Just a quick follow-up. So
LBR.
Basically, any limitation on number of drop boxes within compliance of state law in a county as large as Broward would just be based on their budget and what they could fund?
It would be based on their budget and what they can fund and what they define as a satellite office. So all of that is spelled out in law. So it's then a matter of, because most of their funding comes from the county, so it'd be up to the county to and what they're willing to fund the supervisors for how many different satellite offices they can have.
Thank you.
Representative Lopez, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Secretary. Good morning. I just wanted to thank you for the emphasis on Brickell, the Brickell Center circle. It's in the heart of my district, and it has been a real issue for my constituents. The lighting is bad. The signage is bad. No one knows why we even have that area there. So thank you so much for sort of highlighting that and for putting the resources to make that what most of my constituents want it to be, which is a state-owned, beautiful area where we can actually kind of honor the remains that were found, the tribal remains that were found, and what the history of it is there. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Antone and Representative Burtfield, you both had questions. Okay. Well, just to preface, we're nearing about 30 minutes into an hour and a half meeting. I've made emergency management, come twice now to give their presentation. Please just ask questions related to the legislative budget request so we can move to DOT.
And I'd be happy to come back if y'all need me to. But
it sounds like we might.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Secretary. Quick question. Does your the state or the Department of Historical Resources has some very valuable resources? Does your budget have sufficient funding to keep all of those items and possessions secure?
Thank you for the question. So, yes, we, you know, I know that the staff doesn't like me to say this, but we literally sit on the state's treasure. I mean, we have a lot of valuable, I mean, really priceless artifacts in the state inventory, and we diligently protect them and have enough currently to continue to protect them. But the conservation lab will really go a long way in putting that in one place, modernizing it. I can tell you that we get compliments nationally from historical societies on how well we protect those resources. Earlier in the year, I met with the Spanish from Spain, their cultural ministry. They came and they were really, really impressed with how well we are preserving their history. I was a little concerned that they might want some of their stuff back, but they didn't. They were very happy to leave it here in place, and were very complimentary of what my staff does to preserve that history.
Representative Burfield.
Thank you. Really quick, could you talk to us, in looking at the information technology projects that you're asking for, one of the questions I have is, as you look at that modernization, how are you engaging those who will be utilizing those new updated services to make sure that they're effective and efficient for them to utilize?
You mean the public? Is that primarily what you're asking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So once the money's appropriated and we can get into the planning phases, I mean, obviously that's what we want to do is maximize that usability for customers. I mean, we put a lot of information on our website. Last year, we did an FVRS modernization to try to just make it more user-friendly so that citizens have all of the information that they need, whether it's voting, whether it's SunBiz, to ensure that they have that it's as easy and user-friendly as possible. So we're cognizant of making sure that you know, there's nothing more frustrating than going to a government website you can't find the information you're looking for. And once again, with regard to SunBiz, I get compliments all the time on how easy the SunBiz system is.
So just for clarification, you do engage those who will be utilizing those specific sites for submitting materials or trying to capture that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can tell you with respect to elections with the ADA community, we work very closely with their advocates to ensure that the sites are as user-friendly as possible. So if any of you have constituents that have concerns or find something that isn't as user-friendly, please let us know.
Thank you very much, Secretary. You can go catch your flight now.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend. Look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much. Speaking of airports, next up we have Secretary Perdue from the Florida Department of Transportation. Secretary, you're recognized.
Thank you for having me here today to present our legislative budget request for fiscal year 24-25. Just would like to point out there are several members of our executive team here in the audience today who are responsible for delivering the infrastructure that goes in our work program, so I appreciate their presence here. Okay, next slide. Thank you so much. Okay, let's get right into this. Okay, so our total legislative budget request is $13.13 billion. Of that $13.13 billion, the breakdown is $11.88 goes into our work program. I would like to highlight that as part of our work program, we are statutorily required, but also proud of the fact that we fund the maintenance and preservation of our existing assets first. Then we fund capacity. The way we fund capacity is we use local priorities as a guide, and we invest in capital projects that meet our mission of safe and efficient mobility and congestion relief. We have a grassroots planning effort that goes through the MPOs and local communities, and it's very successful throughout the years. Our operating budget request is $995.4 million, and we do internally embrace the zero-based budgeting process every year when we develop that operating budget, and I'll get into that in a little more detail in subsequent slides. Our debt service is $289.9 million. I would like to highlight that we take a very conservative, fiscally conservative approach with debt service. By law, we're actually required to keep it less than 20% of the total projected available state and federal revenues, and currently our debt load is around 6.5%. So very conservative with debt. And then with fixed capital outlay, which is our facilities, the request is $35.5 million. Next slide. Just to highlight as part of our work program, what I did here was extract out some of the major highlights to show you the scope and magnitude and the diversity of our portfolio in terms of capital investments. So these are some of the highlights of our $11.8 billion work program request. And you can see there's $4.8 billion for highway construction, $261.9 billion for bridge construction, $1.7 billion for resurfacing projects. And again, resurfacing is basically capital maintenance. So this is one of those maintenance and preservation items that we fund and prioritize. Seaports, rail, transit, aviation are a very important part of Florida's growth, Florida's economy, and also moving people and freight. And so we work closely with our partners to provide capital funding for their capital programs. And then I would like to highlight the safety project program. It's at $181 million. These are standalone safety projects, but this is not inclusive of everything we're doing safety. Safety is a part of every single project. We spare no expense with safety, whether it's capacity, resurfacing, no matter what we're doing, safety is part of our program. And then the other work program categories, this is basically everything else that goes into us meeting our mission with the production activities, preliminary engineering, construction inspection, right-of-way land acquisition, and also the operations and maintenance of the assets themselves. And so you can see we have a very robust work program request. Okay, next slide. So just to go into a little bit more detail about our operating budget request, so we have a recurring base budget request right now of $926 million. The $995 total request is made up of an additional $31.9 in operations and $32 million in technology. What I'm showing you here is a breakdown of the additional $31.9 million for operations. And just to highlight a few categories, one that I'm personally very passionate about is our heavy equipment. We have a request for $9.7 million. This equipment is critical to our employees being able to do their jobs. A great example of that is when we respond to emergencies like hurricanes. This equipment is what we use to clear roads and pick up debris. It's been very vital these last two hurricane seasons. And personally, you know, boots on the ground, I went and visited our field crews after Hurricane Ian. We had six dump trucks lined up being worked on, and you can imagine the lost production with that. So, you know, this is very important that we continue to update that equipment. Turnpike operations, I want to highlight this because we had the ribbon cutting on our new SunTrax facility this past year. It's truly a beacon for emerging technology, and, you know, one of our goals is to promote, inspire, attract startups, innovators to the state of Florida. We want to be the place where companies are implementing new technologies for transportation, and SunTrax is going to be a big part of that. And so the bulk of the $6.94 million for turnpike operations is the additional operating budget to run that SunTrax operation. I want to highlight the $10.8 million for increased operating costs. So this is basically, you know, the nuts and bolts of keeping the lights on and running our facilities. Utility bills, the janitorial services, and everything that goes into day-to-day operations. And, you know, just as a data point, we have seen over the last couple of years, a 15% increase in utility costs. Okay, next slide. With technology, we have taken a very proactive, strategic approach to technology, and we've really divided our objectives into three strategic buckets, what I'll call them, data security and privacy. This is something that's extremely important. All of our financial systems, most of the decisions we make are all rooted and based in technology. And so we take data security very seriously. We continue to invest in it. And so this is an important part of our legislative budget request. With preventing business disruption and failure, as you've heard from probably many other agencies, a lot of the technologies that we use today are antiquated. Some of them are 20, 30 plus years old, and they're in desperate need of being upgraded. We have several ongoing strategic initiatives. One is to, for instance, with the data storage, migrating that to the cloud. There's a lot of risk associated with antiquated technologies. That's the data infrastructure modernization program. PALM readiness is really important to us. This is basically our accounting systems. I know many of you are familiar with that. And Project Suite Enterprise, the 500,000 request, this is a program and system that we use to manage the production of all of our projects. So it's really important to us that we update that. Then the strategic investment bucket, this is the one that I would say these are forward-facing, future new initiatives that we believe will make us more efficient looking into the future. The one that I would like to highlight is the 3D model viewer application. And so most of our project production activities now are being done in a 3D modeling environment. And so this is becoming the mainstream, and we're preparing to upgrade so that all of our systems are compliant with that. Okay, next slide. In terms of our fixed capital outlay, we have a $35.5 million request. Just to highlight a few of the components here, for code corrections of FDOT-owned buildings, $16 million. This is really important to us. A lot of our buildings are aging. Many of them are fairly old. We do a good job of maintaining them, but at the same time, we have to bring them up to current code. And we have over 800 buildings and facilities statewide, so that's the significance of this request. Our Chipley Operations Building, this is at our District 3 headquarters. This building is over 80 years old. It is the central hub for our emergency operations, and it has significant issues with flooding, especially during rain events, and so it's definitely time for that building to be replaced. The Jacksonville Urban Office is also one of our older aged buildings. It's over 60 years old, and it's time to start looking at the replacement of that. But for both of those facilities, we've actually broken it up into a phased approach, and so what we're requesting is phase one of that building replacement. All right, next slide. And then to close out the presentation, I just wanted to acknowledge that we do every year, as required, go through the Schedule 8B exercise. We believe, as stewards of taxpayer dollars, this is a good exercise because, as I mentioned earlier, we do use a zero-based budgeting approach. But then at the same time, we need to assess what would it look like if we don't receive everything that we actually need. And so we went through this exercise, and it definitely would be critical to our operation if we had to implement something like this. But at the same time, it is a good exercise to give. So with that, Mr. Chairman, next slide. As we continue to look to the future, we are going to use our FDOT compass to guide how we strategically invest in projects. And as I've traveled the state over the last year and a half, the components of this compass are very important to our communities. And as we continue to build major complex infrastructure that relieves congestion, we will be addressing safety, resiliency, technology, supply chain, and workforce development as part of that. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Do we have any questions? Representative Antone, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's not a serious question, man. Do you have any money in your budget for Terminal C in Orlando?
Mr. Chairman,
you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. As you have probably seen at the Orlando International Airport, as well as many other airports in the state, the growth is just astronomical, and the passenger count is multiplying rapidly. And Terminal C was a great addition to that airport, but at the same time, you know, the population of Florida is growing, tourism is growing. A lot of our airports are finding themselves dealing with this heavy passenger load, and it's a real challenge. And we're going to continue to partner with them. We have a pretty big capital program that supports all of their expansions and capital improvements.
Vice Chair Cheney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Andrade. Thank you, Secretary Perdue. I appreciate that I'm hearing a real concern for fiscal responsibility in your budget, and I appreciate that. Last year, we approved the largest budget for Forward Florida with the intention of reducing congestion across the state. And I see you've got a lot of elements in here that do that. It's part of your mission statement. I appreciate that. But on the local level, that's not actually what's being implemented. In many cases, quite the opposite is happening with these lane reduction repurposing projects. So as legislators who are funding you to help reduce congestion, yet we're experiencing activities that do just the opposite, is there something that we need to be doing? Do we need to adjust the budget? Do we need to do something legislatively? Can you help us? Because we're working right now in conflict with what we're funding.
You're recognized.
Chairman. Thank you, Vice Chair Cheney. Great question. And so I mentioned earlier, our mission is to move people and goods efficiently and safely. That is congestion relief. Under Governor DeSantis's leadership, you know, he's been a real visionary with relieving congestion across the state. Moving Florida forward was a tremendous investment. Thank you so much for supporting that. It's going to make a huge difference. We at FDOT, lane reduction road diets, this is not something that's part of our mission. But as over the last several years, a lot of local communities, some of them are like historic downtown areas. Some of them have state road facilities that no longer function like a state road facility. I mean, we're focused on regional connectivity. In many cases, some of those have transferred ownership. But at the same time, these local communities have plans. They have visions for what they want to do. And so as we saw this road diet lane reduction idea developing over the last 10 years, we developed a policy that basically requires full support from those local communities. So they have to pass resolutions, but then also they have to do a traffic study to show and prove, you know, with data that whatever they're proposing does not cause congestion issues and have a negative impact on traffic congestion. And so this is the policy that we have. We do, when we deliver projects, we do work with our local communities. We have a very extensive community engagement program, and we sit down and we listen. We want to hear, you know, what their goals, what their desires are. And we do the best that we can to align their vision with our infrastructure. Sometimes, you know, it fully aligns, other times it does not. But we have a pretty robust policy that governs, you know, the lane reduction idea, and it has to have full support from locals, and they have to show that it does not have a negative impact on traffic.
Representative Burfield, you're recognized.
So a follow-up to that, what does full support look like? Is that just a letter from the local government? Is that full support from the community?
Mr. Chairman?
You're recognized. Yeah. Answer to that.
Thank you. So anytime we're working with locals, obviously there's a diversity of opinions, and so the thing that we typically require are resolutions from the local government entities that facility is within, and also the project or idea has to be a priority that's been vetted by the regional MPO as well.
Representative Lopez, did you have a question on the LBR?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. So I was looking at both transit, your transit budget, as well as your seaport budget. So you know that in Miami-Dade County, we do not build roads anymore. We have lots and lots of transit projects. You may not be able to answer this today, but I would like to know, of the $597 million that you have in transit, how much of that is coming to Miami-Dade? And then I also have the Seaport of Miami. I'd like to know of the $105 million, how much is being allocated and for what projects in the port? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Secretary.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, I don't have specifics to those questions. I can certainly share those with you. I will say that in South Florida, with congestion relief as the priority in South Florida, you know, a lot of the roadway network is built out, and so you do have to turn to other modes. The MPO down in South Florida has prioritized other modes as part of their SMART plan, and we are a capital investment partner in that. And there is currently over $200 million programmed in the 5-year plan for the expansion of commuter rail, which has helped relieve congestion on I-95.
Representative Marker, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Secretary, for your presentation. I'm going to follow up on Representative Lopez identifying how important seaports are to our state and our economy. You have $105 million in for seaports. How does that compare to the last couple of years' budgets?
Mr. Chairman, recognize. Thank you, Representative. I don't have those specific numbers in front of me, but I can certainly get that for you. But we as part of our strategic intermodal system, we do designate a certain amount of capital funds to partner with seaports. And, you know, they have a prioritization process that they go through with their Ports Council and FSTED. And then we're a capital partner in implementing all of their capital plans across the state.
Representative Burfield, you recognize?
Thank you. And this is specifically to your LBR. As I understand it, the department has about 7 reports, maybe 9, that you all work on that deal with either seaports, aviation, rail, or traditional transit. How have you all taken and looked at those reports, integrated them as you're bringing forward the recommendations on the things that you're suggesting?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. So we work very closely with our modal partners, seaports and airports, also transit agencies. They all have extensive capital plans that they develop because they're their own entities. And so in the state of Florida, we're a little bit unique. Seaports and airports are usually authorities or they're their own entities within the county. Transit agencies are funded and operated at the local level as well. And so we are a capital partner in that. And so they all develop extensive capital improvement plans. At the same time, we're looking at the needs statewide for congestion relief, for supply chain, for the movement of freight. And we bring all of that together and kind of aggregate it up and look at it statewide. And so we take the bulk of their capital plans into consideration as we look statewide, and then we invest in those. So it's kind of like a comprehensive process.
Any follow-up? So do you actually have a comprehensive or a strategic plan that reflects what those priorities are for the next 10 to 15 years where you can say, these are the projects we need to be focused on in which to achieve a stronger, not only person mobility, but freight mobility as well to protect that supply chain?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative. Yes, we actually do have those plans, and I'll be happy to share those with you.
I did have a question related to your cybersecurity requests, and your LBR includes a request for 5 FTEs related to cybersecurity. I see that there is an assistant secretary filling the role of information technology today, pulling double duty. I was curious if any review of the vacant FTE positions in info technology were considered or looked at before requesting additional FTEs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep, that's a great question. So the broader perspective with vacancies, we have experienced a significantly high vacancy rate over the last several years. The recruitment retention budget that was provided to us from the legislature has helped tremendously. We not only did we have a high vacancy rate, our separation rate was abnormally high. And so it pushed our vacancies up to 20%. This is at a critical level for our business. With that recruitment retention budget, we've actually been able to lower that vacancy rate significantly. We've brought it down to around 15%. And we're continuing to make progress. And so, yes, as part of this request, we do review the vacancies that we have. And the vacancies we have are a very high priority for us. The challenge that we run into is, you know, not having the rate to fill all those positions based on, you know, the comparable salaries of the, you know, type of position that we're trying to hire. So we did do that review and analysis. And with regards to the cybersecurity request, we believe it's extremely important that we maintain some level of expertise internal to DOT, because this is a very critical and sensitive area for us.
I was just curious along that same line related to the investments in the data infrastructure modernization and the POM remediation. Are there any systems that overlap in those two requests related to what you're doing on either request?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They are different systems exclusively, but in terms of how they interact, there is a lot of overlap, because all of our systems that have been developed over the years all are interconnected with each other. And so there is a need, as we update one, we have to update all of the other ones so that they can continue to communicate with each other.
Thank you very much. Members, any further questions? If not, thank you very much, Secretary. I'm sure we'll be seeing y'all soon.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up, and with a full 40 minutes, we have the Department of Emergency Management. Mr. Luke Strickland.
All right, good morning. Thank you for having me here today, Chair Andrade, Vice Chair Cheney, Ranking Member Silvers, and representatives of the subcommittee. My name is Luke Strickland. I have served as the Chief of Staff for the Florida Division of Emergency Management since 2021. I'm happy to be here with you today to present our legislative budget request for the 24-25 fiscal year. In my time as Chief of Staff, the Division has responded to several types of disasters, including hurricanes, tropical storms, wildfires, floods, and other unique events. As you can see on this graphic, the Division has been activated, working a disaster for every single day in 2023. Those activations include Hurricane Idalia, Broward County flooding, Hurricane Nicole, and Hurricane Ian. So a little about DEM. We have 220 salaried employees, and we are authorized for up to 161 OPS staff. Currently, the Division's base recurring budget totals $83 million, and of that, $73.9 million is trust fund, and $9.1 million is state general revenue. My goal today is to showcase how your investment will continue to make returns and ensure that Florida is prepared to respond to emergencies, recover from them, mitigate against their impacts, and move billions of federal dollars to communities and back to the state as quickly as possible. So let's dive into our highlights of the 24-25 LBR. First, we're requesting 5 FTE to establish a contract management unit. This team will be solely responsible for overseeing the Division's contracts during both blue and gray skies. The Division executes thousands of contracts and agreements and tens of thousands of invoices and purchase orders. Having a dedicated contract management unit will allow us to better manage the process, guarantee all deliverables are met, and ensure all contracts stay within their budget. Also, with the newly created Emergency Preparedness and Response Fund, this will allow us to more accurately and timely project disaster costs and manage fund balance within the EPRF. Next, we are requesting $42 million in non-recurring funds for technology infrastructure to complete construction on the state's new Emergency Operations Center. Thanks to past investments by the legislature, the state has been able to move forward with groundbreaking on the new EOC. We are requesting this funding in order to be able to complete the build-out of the new EOC by our 2025 move-in date. Moving into a new EOC in 2025 is crucial to the state's ability to respond to emergencies. Currently, we have to evacuate the state EOC anytime a Category 3 or higher hurricane is heading for Tallahassee. Our facility cannot withstand anything stronger than a Category 3. This fall, when Hurricane Idalia rapidly intensified into a Category 4 and moved towards Tallahassee, it was too late to evacuate and stop our operations. We made the decision to keep working in Tallahassee with our core team, and we sent a secondary team to the Escambia County EOC to continue the work if we lost operational ability in Tallahassee. The new EOC will be rated for Category 5, up to 200 mile per hour winds, and we will never have to evacuate. The next two requests are part of the Division's Emergency Management Enterprise Solution. The last two sessions, the Division received non-recurring funding from the legislature to build out and implement this initiative. This year, we're requesting $5.8 million in non-recurring funding to continue this implementation. This solution will continue to automate, modernize, and streamline all of DEM's systems and business processes, which will help quickly move billions of dollars in federal funding to your communities and back to the state. Tied to this, we are also requesting $1.9 million in recurring funds to provide baseline licensing support for this enterprise solution. Next, we are requesting $3.6 million in recurring funds for our IT department's operational baseline support. This is for our recurring licensing agreements. Currently, the division has no dedicated funding source for what is a lot of basic needs to include things like Microsoft Office. Our next request is for one FTE to serve as the executive director of the Florida Emergency Management Assistance Foundation. This DSO was established during special session last year, and the possibilities of what we can do to serve disaster victims through this foundation are endless, and we're really excited about it, but we need a staff member dedicated to the foundation to help maximize its success. Next, we are requesting $2.5 million in recurring funds for our statewide WebEOC initiative. Last year, the legislature appropriated funding to implement this program. We do need recurring in order to continue providing all municipalities with WebEOC access. This request will ensure all cities and counties have the same baseline ability to input mission and resource requests by providing licensing, maintenance, and training to support all during a disaster response. We've made great progress implementing this initiative and are excited to continue this important work for all your communities. And our last highlight is the conversion of 6 OPS employees to FTE. As I mentioned earlier, about 1/3 of DEM's workforce is OPS employees. With such a large number of OPS, it is a challenge to recruit and retain versus other state agencies, let alone the federal government and private sector. These 6 we're asking to be converted are not temporary, they're permanent, crucial positions to the division. They're also very hard to fill and retain positions as OPS. 4 are IT and 2 are attorneys. So this concludes our presentations. Thank you for allowing me to present before you today. I do want to thank all the members and staff on this committee for your commitment to Florida's disaster recovery efforts. The Florida Legislature has been an incredible partner in securing funding and ensuring our communities have all the resources they need to recover. We're prepared to answer any questions or provide additional information. You can also reach out to Amelia Johnson, our Legislative Affairs Director. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Are there any questions? Seeing no one else, I did want to ask, last year there was a request for about $50 million for a new warehousing facility, and I was personally curious where that process is on the procurement, and if that estimate was close to what actually may have come back already.
So I don't want to give you a number yet because we, as proviso directed, we entered into an IT end, which we are in the negotiation phase of that currently. We're expecting to have a dollar amount estimate by the end of the month, and we're going to update our LBR, and then hopefully the governor's recommendations will include it as well. So we'll get that to you before December 1st, but we are in the negotiation phase of that ITN.
Thank you very much. Representative Yeager, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your FTE positions, right, so looks like you request about 22 new positions. Over the last couple of years, the legislature has appropriated 45 FTE positions. How is all that come together? How's that affecting your vacancy rates and turnover rates? And just kind of where do we stand today in the department?
Sure. Thank you for the question, sir. Yes, we have been very fortunate. You guys have been amazing partners. I think the division, we had this stretch of like 10 years where there wasn't a lot of big hurricanes. And since that happened, we've been very, very busy. And I think the division was very understaffed a few years ago, and I think we're finally getting to a point where we can have the appropriate level of staff. We are a small agency, and we're very nimble, but we also have a very large workload. Everyone has 2 jobs. They have a blue sky job. They have a gray sky job. But no, specifically those positions we've gotten over the last few years, we were able to put people in the field. We were able to staff up our finance office. We've done a lot of good things with this position you guys have given us, and it's made a huge difference. And as far as vacancies, thanks to the pay increases that were in last year's GAA, we are able to start filling a lot of the finance and IT positions that we were struggling to fill previously. So thank you guys very much for that.
Representative Gene Lombardo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. And I appreciate all the work that you guys are doing. I'm down in Southwest Florida, I knew Guthrie was down there, like he lived there. So yeah. So in terms of your special response team equipment and training support, so DFS has a similar setup. Can you kind of tell us what some of the differences are? They have a similar request too.
Yeah, they do, and we're actually coordinating with them on that right now. So hopefully we'll have something updated to you guys soon. But so basically this was the USAR money that we had asked for the last couple years. The $10 million we got in USAR funding from 2 years ago. We partnered with DFS to help distribute that money to the urban search and rescue teams. We wanted to continue something in that vein. We didn't want to ask for $10 million for the USAR group again. We wanted to focus on USAR, but also focus on the incident management teams that are very important to emergency response, and also hazardous materials, training and materials and things like that. So our request that we have currently is $1 million for hazardous material training, $2 million for USAR, and then $2 million for the incident management teams, the IMATs as we call them. But we are coordinating with DFS on that to make sure, you know, they'll be able to do the USAR part and we'll be able to do the other part. But yeah, we'll make sure there's no overlap between our two requests.
Members, any further questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Members, that concludes our topics set for today's agenda. As y'all are aware, these presentations by these agencies are their legislative budget requests. We are still waiting on, we're awaiting the governor's requested budget, and I anticipate seeing presentations from the governor's office in the next few weeks related to their budget requests. And then from there, we'll begin the process of crafting a budget. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative LaMarca moves that we rise.